Good morning, sir. Can you hear me clearly?
I think he's picked up the phone, yeah.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
Can you state your full name and ABC number for the record?
Mustafa Kazim, 046033.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for 31412B parole hearing to consider parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I'd like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. You can see on your teleconference screen, to my extreme far left on the bench is the Honorable Mr. David Neal. After him is the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. At the center of the bench is our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. To my right is the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. My name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel chairman for this hearing. Can you hear me clearly, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I will begin the hearing with the following summary. Mr. Mustafa Kasim is 57 years old. He was certified eligible by ADC for 31412B parole to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. He was arrested for first-degree murder, armed robbery, and narcotic drug charges on July 31st, 1982. He pled guilty and was sentenced on November 3rd, 1982. He was approximately 22 years old at the time of his instant offenses. So far, does this sound correct, Mr. Kasim?
Yes, sir.
He's currently serving a life sentence with a pending 4.5-year consecutive sentence for narcotic drug violations. He was granted home arrest twice and revoked twice in 2009 and 2012, respectively. His last revocation was due to drug use in violation of the conditions of his release. I will read a brief synopsis of the crimes in question. On the early morning of July 31st, 2000, pardon me, to get oriented. On the early morning of July 31st, 1982, Mr. Kasim stole money and jewelry from victims Cliff Strait and Ann Rouse at gunpoint as they were walking to their vehicle in the parking lot of a nightclub. 5 to 10 minutes later, again at gunpoint, Mr. Kasim stole wallets, money, and jewelry from victims Lonnie Cosper, Holly Cosper, and Donald Koenig as they were walking from their vehicle through the parking lot to a local restaurant. During the armed robbery, Mr. Koenig was shot in the chest and later died from his injuries. When Mr. Kasim was apprehended about 10 minutes later, police found stolen wallets, money, and jewelry on the defendant's person and her vehicle. Furthermore, the victims identified Mr. Kasim as the perpetrator of these crimes. Mr. Kasim has completed moderate programming since incarceration. According to his progress report, he has a release plan that includes living with his mother and seeking employment. He has an extensive history of discipline in ADC, that is 4 pages of discipline to be exact, in Ames, from 1983 to 2016, with his last major in 2015 for promoting prison contraband. This is his 19th hearing before the board. It should be noted that the Maricopa County Attorney's Office submitted a letter on March 21st, 2017, opposing Mr. Kasim's parole. The instant offenses in question do represent an escalation in violent crime from the beginning of his criminal history. Mr. Kasim, you have new board members since your last hearing. This is an opportunity for the board to get to know you. Could you please tell us in your own words about the crimes that led to your incarceration, sir?
Yes. On July 31st, 1982, I had committed the crime of robbery and murder on Mr. Donald Cooney. It was an incident that I was smoking PCP at the time, and I ended up in the resorts of that, I ended up killing. but the behavior that I had portrayed back then was, it wasn't a pattern. That was my first time ever doing anything like that. And I think the only reason that I did do that at that time was because of the PCP, because I hardly remember the crime and period at all. And since then, I have been trying desperately to get over the drug problem that I had. I haven't been with PCP since, but I used to smoke a lot of marijuana here in prison. And I quit smoking that back in 1995. And then I got on some pain medication that the doctors had prescribed to me. And I think I abused those. But I've been taking classes, and I've been going to NA and AA, trying to better myself. Because that is not a pattern that I want to keep going at. Because I got kids and grandkids out there that I haven't even met. Well, my kids I know, but my grandkids I haven't even met, and I would very much like to get to know them. And that's the vision on me. I've been programming, and I'm still programming. I'm in a class now for, it's a class where you're trying to, you've been locked up a long time, and you're trying to better yourself in society, you know what I'm saying, where you can deal with society better than other people. And I believe I'm doing a pretty good job there. I'm able to see things that I haven't with now. Any other time I've been taking notice of, I've been really trying to grow as a person. And when I was released from prison, it was a shock to me. It was kind of like a cultural shock, because I've been gone for so long, and it took me a minute to adapt to it, because I was out of house arrest, and it took me a minute to adapt to society, because I was paranoid, because I had been here so long, and while you're in prison, it seems like you know what people in here, you know what they do, how they carry themselves, if they carrying guns, if they carrying knives or whatever. But when you're out there in the world, it was like I was kind of paranoid. Like I could stand at I could be window shopping, then I see somebody come up behind me, and they window shopping also. You know what I'm saying? I won't say nothing, but I'll be paranoid and I'll just leave. You know what I'm saying? I'll stop doing what I'm doing and I'll leave, because I don't know, and I've been watching the news about all this crazy stuff going on out there. I'm really not a dangerous person. I just had a problem with drugs. And since I've been back, I received a ticket for a contraband that was for having some spice. Since that ticket, though, I haven't touched drugs or did anything. I've been steady trying to do better. I know I'm getting older. My mother's getting older. My kids is getting older. And spending time with them, because I know I ain't hurt nobody, you know what I'm saying? By that big age, I know I ain't hurt nobody but myself and my family. You know what I'm saying? I'm tired of putting hurt on people. And as far as a dangerous history, I haven't had a dangerous one since I've been in prison. As far as fighting, any of that nature, all my tickets was mostly, you know what I'm saying, for UAs, dirty UAs for marijuana. But since I had stopped using marijuana, I haven't had any dirty UAs. Every time they pull me up for a UA, I'm clean. I'm clean because I don't do that anymore. And I had an infection where it's hard for me to urinate on cue. If they call you and give you 2 hours to urinate, know, and I'm not able to urinate in 2 hours, they're gonna say, but it's a medical problem. The medical had evidence of me having that problem. But when I put them down as a witness, all of a sudden it's not in the computer anymore. I'm really not trying to blame anybody, but it's a medical problem. You get older, you have more problems. You have more problems with your body that you didn't have when you was young. But I haven't had anybody, a body of history when I was here in prison, when I was been in prison, or when I got out. And the only bodies that I've had was when they have, I've been in a few riots. Okay, but them circumstances is totally through them with you. Okay, and there's nothing, there's no weapons involved. Okay, it was fighting. You know what I'm saying? That's only been a couple of riots. So. But other than that, I haven't had any problems since I've been here. For the 35 years I've been in prison. I'm really trying to build myself and for my family. And I got plans this next time when I get out. You know, I'll have to stay with my mother for a little while, but I plan to, I need to start my own business because it's hard for me to get a job out there whenever. Because they used to ask, you know, say, criminal history on the application, but I hear they don't do that anymore. You know, and then when they heard my criminal history as far as the robberies and the murder, it was, I was getting refused employment. So I was doing day labor work, and where they pay you $50 a day to work. So I was doing a lot of that. But I come up with a suggestion to myself that I can get my food camera's license, and I can give me a hot dog vending machine. I can sell, not a machine, but a hot dog wagon or a truck or something. Sell hot dogs, potato chips, soda pop, water, and stuff like that. Be self-employed. That way I wouldn't have to depend on anybody else for my survival. And I really believe that I have changed. I believe that life ain't what it was when I got out. I believe it's better. I just didn't know how to really deal with it because I didn't have any training from being here, like reentry classes. They wouldn't let me get in any because of the license. They said that I don't qualify to be in a reentry class or anything like that. So I had to pretty much make it when I got out. But I know how it is out there in society now, so I believe I could have a better chance at surviving legitimately if I was given another chance. But that's what I would like to ask for just one more chance. If I was to mess up, you would never have to let me out again. Because I don't see myself ever coming back here again.
Thank you, sir. First of all, I appreciate how you're presenting yourself before the board. I have just some questions. One, going back to the original crime, you said you were under the influence of PCP?
Yes, sir.
How did that affect you?
It happened where, as you know, it depends on how much you smoke or where you don't remember things. You plan out. And I believe that's what happened for me because I had to be told what went down that night. I was told by the detectives and stuff what went down that night. Said that my girlfriend had told them everything. And I told her, but she said, I guess that's what happened because I don't remember. But I was willing, I'm willing to accept my responsibility for whether I remember it or not. You know, if you say I did it, I did. That's the only way I was able to get through this time. But admitted to myself, you know, saying that that's what happened. I mean, I'm not in denial about it. I was sorry about it because I even tried to write Mr. Colley's family, but when I got locked up, when I was in the prison, I tried to contact him, but the DOC told me that I couldn't contact the victim's family, so I was never able to apologize for my actions, for what I did, you know what I'm saying, where I took away a husband and a kid's father. I was never able to apologize. They never take any of these hearings, whereas I could apologize to them. But I am truly, truly sorry, because of what happened, because it's not my place to take lives. I didn't give them life, I have no reason to take it from them. When the human life is just too precious for a person to be doing things like that. Because I see it going on TV now, like they taking people's lives in masses. You know, mass murder, you know what I'm saying? Senseless, you know what I'm saying? And I've never been a fan of that, you know, so, yeah.
Sir, you had, if I'm not mistaken, two revocations, correct?
Revocation hearings?
Yeah, you were revoked from your home arrest or parole twice.
Yes, sir.
I think the second one was for drug use, but what was the earlier one for in 2009?
The earlier one was for, I really don't know what it was. They say it was behind drugs, but I was never charged with anything. It might be a police contact. It really never even told me what it was for.
You returned to the Department of Corrections in 2012. You've had some drug issues since, I guess, but you said mostly with marijuana. I guess I'm uncomfortable with the fact that you had your freedom two times and were revoked. So how have you changed since 2012?
Well, in 2012, when I got arrested, it was mostly because I was on a pain management doctor that had me on Percocets. And I think I abused the Percocet. I think I abused, you know, say, my prescription because I used to run out. And then when you run out of your regular medication, you're trying to self-medicate. And that's what I did, just trying to get loose the pain. Because I wasn't using them to get high on. But when you abuse something and when you run out of something, you try to self-medicate, you know what I'm saying? And that's what I did. And that's how I got caught up and sent back here this time. But I've been in here since I've been back, I haven't been using drugs, I haven't done anything. You know, I got caught with some spikes one time. Because this guy had the spice. He was my cellie, and they charged both of us because wouldn't nobody take the weight for him. He wouldn't take the weight for what he had, so I just had to ride out with him. The suspicion is kind of taboo around there.
When is the last time you used drugs, Mr. Cassine?
2012, when I was
on
the street, when I was taking the
Percocet. So I'm not doubting you, but I just want to make sure that you're saying that you haven't used any drugs since you were violated, and you haven't used drugs inside the prison system?
Yes, sir.
At this point, I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
Sure. Sir, so in 2016 and 15, they were informally resolved, but in 2015, you had three promoting prison contrabands. One was found guilty, one was dismissed, and another one was guilty. They are were majors. What was the prison contraband in 2015?
It was the spice.
Okay, so.
The spice?
Yes, sir.
And refusal for the UA. That's why I had medical problems. I couldn't urinate.
So,
and they found a rig, a syringe, which wasn't mine. It was six people at that table when the officer came out. Okay, because the officer was known for patting people out. So when he came out, people throw things. See, the thing ran over there by my foot. Officer said it was mine. I had to write it out, I wrote it out. They didn't have no evidence. He tried to say that I did found it. He found it by my foot, so he was automatically his mind, but it was six other people sitting at that table.
So So 2015 will be the last time that's reported in your Ames report that you were associated with any drugs?
Yes, sir. Last time I had a ticket period in 15, August of 15, I believe it was.
I think you had one, you had two tickets in 16 for disobeying verbal and disrupting count. You recall those?
I'll recall them.
Okay.
Disrupting count.
All right, so.
Sorry, I don't recall those.
So you were granted parole on two separate times in 2011 and 2009 you were granted parole?
Yes, sir.
And were both of those revoked as a result of drugs?
Yes, sir. I believe the first one, I don't believe it was a result of drugs, but I believe it was police contact, I'm not sure. But the second one was behind drugs.
Okay, and you said that you weren't a violent person, that you don't really commit violence, all your crimes are drug related. So what happened during the robbery that caused this victim to get shot and killed?
The girl that was with me told me that I was robbing the people, and I was taking their stuff, and Mr. Cody, he tried to grab me. He said, I pushed him off of me and shot me. That's how she said I did. That's what they told me went down. But I'm also hearing that the police is saying in a police report that dude was on his knees begging for his life and said that I shot him, which I believe it was a struggle with the gun, but you know what I'm saying? He was pushed off and shot hard, but you know, like somebody grabs me, you push him off and then shoot him. That's what I believe happened there.
Okay. According to when I was looking at the pre-sentence investigation,
he was one second.
Yes, sir. Put the CO3 on the phone.
All right. Thank you.
I guess you have to use the bathroom.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Thank you. Separate facilities.
Yeah. This happened to me.
Oh, me too.
Drink a lot of coffee this morning.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay, sir. Thank you, and we'll just continue. So, Mr. Johnson?
Okay. I was just trying to go over where you're saying that you didn't feel like that you were a violent person, that most of your crimes are related to drugs, but according to a statement that you wrote in the report, you never said anything about blacking out or not remembering what happened, with the exception that you did say that you had smoked a lot of Sherman PCP from Friday till from Wednesday till that Friday, but you and your girlfriend apparently had went to this Bogart's bar restaurant and was there and had drank and spent a lot of money, and then after you guys left, you decided to do the robberies. Is
Yeah, that's what it is. We just started. About 3 years before the incident, we had been smoking and stuff. But I didn't mention it because I didn't remember. I didn't remember what happened. As far as blacking out, I guess you don't remember. You don't care. I never blacked out before, but they was never able to get a statement. But what you would see.
Okay.
Because I didn't remember the crime.
Okay, I was just going over your statement that you made, a written statement that you wrote out and gave to the police department, but you didn't say in that statement that you had blacked out and didn't remember anything about what happened. You didn't mention it then.
I thought I did, I think. Well, I remember when they woke me up, I said something that they woke me up and I said, I graduated from high school and I hadn't even been asked a question yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then they told me that they said, well, it was introducing each person that was in the room, the prosecutor and stuff. And then they asked me, they said, well, your girlfriend that told us everything, would you like to tell us what happened? And I told them that, I said, well, if she done told me everything, I guess that's it. I would like to have a lawyer. I think that's what was said during that time.
But you actually got arrested a short period after the shooting, right?
Yes, it was about five or ten minutes. About 5 or 10 minutes after the shooting.
That you got arrested. The police stopped you and arrested you.
Yes.
Okay. So it wasn't like a day or a long period of time after the shooting occurred that you got stopped and arrested by the police, right?
No, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Ms. Rittenhouse?
Yes. There's my microphone. Mr. Kazim, we see a lot of people, you know, in these hearings, and, you know, I notice that you have, in comparison to others, much more discipline in prison. About 4 pages on our Ames printout, and yet we see people who have half a page or less. In fact, many people who have half a page or less. What is causing all the problems that result in you getting disciplined in the prison?
There are mostly drug-related problems. Dirty UA, that's what most of them are. Dirty UA, I might have had a couple disciplinary direct orders. Like if they tell me, you ain't supposed to be over here, or
right.
Being out of place and stuff like that.
Okay, so did you continue to use drugs? Is that, when you say drug-related, is it because you were using or because drugs were found in your living area, or?
That's some of it, and mostly I was smoking a lot of marijuana at the time.
Okay, and you say the last time you used drugs was 2012?
Yes, ma'am, 2012.
I thought I heard you say that. Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Any further questions? My phone number is yes, Dr. Wright.
So back to the original offense, Mr. Cousine, that you keep referring to your girlfriend. Now, how long had you known your girlfriend at that time, sir?
I had met her 5 months. I had known her 5 months. I met her when I came out here to Arizona from Michigan. I had met her when I got here because my sister used to babysit her kids. She used to stay right next door. That's how I met her.
And why do you suspect that, and I know you don't know, I would assume that you won't know, but why do you suspect that she told the officers, from her perspective, what had happened, that you actually committed that murder? Why do you suspect she did that, sir?
Because that's what they had told me.
Why, but you knew her for 5 months. You know, if I know somebody for 5 months, I know them pretty well, so why do you suspect that she turned on you, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
I believe behind the threat that they put down, they said that they're going to give us the death penalty, they said they're going to take her keys, they said we're going to take your keys, we're going to give you a license or a death penalty, and if you know, testify against me, so as a witness, you know, saying against me, so that I knew she wasn't built like that.
Did she actually testify against you in court, or that was just Before the officers, that she actually...
That was just for the officers at the police station, because I cleaned it out.
Now...
I admitted to receiving the 25 life.
And you admitted...
They was telling me if I get found guilty, if I was going to trial and get found guilty, they was going to give me 130 years of death penalty.
I just want to make sure I understand that. You admitted that totally on the basis of what your girlfriend had told them. Am I correct, sir? Because you had no idea what happened.
Yes, sir. And the evidence that they said they had towards me.
Okay. Now, how long had you been using spice at that time, or any drugs? How long had you been on drugs at that time? About what age did you start?
When I came here to Arizona, they hadn't had no PCP back in Michigan. And when I came here to Arizona, that's what the drug dealers, they was using. It was mixed in with weed, you know what I'm saying, and smoking. So I figured I had been using for maybe a month, about 4 months that I was here, and then I went down and just smoking marijuana. But then I tried that PCP stuff, and I kind of liked it, you know what I'm saying, when you don't do too much of it. But if you smoke too much, you black out. They don't remember.
Let me ask you a final question, and you may not have an answer for it, but I mean, and I know that this offense took place, your sentence rather began in 1982, and you've been incarcerated since then, except when you were out on parole. Now, you had all this time since 1982 to reflect on what happened. Have you concluded anything in your own mind what happened since you pleaded on the basis of what your girlfriend reported to the officers? But have you searched your own mind deep down inside to say what happened when that offense took place, sir?
Yes, sir. I've tried to play it back thousands of times.
What have you concluded, sir?
I concluded that I believe I did what they said I did, but I believe it was a struggle, and the gun went off. That's what I believe. He was trying to take the gun, and the gun went off. That's what I believe. That's what I get when I try to remember things.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, sir, and thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Yes, sir, Doctor. Mr. Johnson.
So I'm just trying to understand. So you said you blacked out. Maybe I'm not quite understanding. So when did you black out? When did you have a blackout?
I believe it had to be at night after, because once we was in the bar drinking, I believe that could have triggered itself, because I never remember anything after we left the bar.
So pretty much you're saying that from the time that you were at Bogart's and you guys were drinking, and the first robbery, you don't remember anything about the first robbery, you were in a blackout, and you drove your car to the second location, and you were in a blackout at that location, committed a robbery, and
she was driving? Yes, sir.
She was driving when the police stopped you guys?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so she was driving the car when the police stopped you guys, and you were in a blackout state when the police stopped you 10 minutes after the second one?
I didn't remember pulling us over. Okay,
all right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Neal?
I saw that on the phone.
Yes, sir. I don't have any questions.
Okay. I'm going to ask your supporters now, Mr. Kasim, if they have anything that they would like to share with the board. So whoever would like to come up first?
Mr. Troy's still on the phone.
Yes, he's still on the phone. You want him to come up?
Would you want him to speak first?
Yeah, please.
Mr. Troy Simmons, are you still on the phone?
Mr. Simmons?
Yes, hello?
Yes, are you, would you like to make your statement before the board now?
Yeah, I sure would. I appreciate the opportunity to make a statement on behalf of my cousin.
Thank you. And hold one second, I don't mean to interrupt you. Can you state your full name first, just for the sake of the recording, and then whatever you'd like to share with the board?
Yes. My name is Troy Simmons. I live in Chandler, Arizona, and Mustafa is my first cousin. And really, the reason that I wanted to speak today just to go back, you know, obviously Mustafa has made some mistakes in his life, as all of us have, and the mistakes that that he's made obviously are big mistakes in the way that we would look at mistakes. But what I can say, and I want to echo, you know, his remarks about his heart, I would not be on the phone today at this hearing and really participating in this if I didn't believe in my heart that, you know, he's not someone that is a violent individual. He's not someone that, you know, is going to come out and harm people. Obviously, I think the main thing here with what has happened to him in his life, it's a result of drugs. You know, and I think that the drug situation is bad. It's bad for him. It's bad for a lot of people. And I think that when you get on drugs, you know, it's hard to get off drugs, and it really does change the course of your life. You know, we grew up together in Pontiac, Michigan, and then his mother, my aunt Tina, relocated to Arizona way, way back in the 70s. And since then, our family, a lot of our family members migrated out. You know, what I think is a shame is that he has spent so many years away from his family and his friends and the people that love him. But I will say that the people that are sitting in the courtroom today, as well as myself on the phone and so many other relatives and friends and family, we all have love for him, and we all want to see the best for him. We understand that he needs to pay for the mistakes that he has made. And, you know, I feel that he's done that, you know, over the course of many years. I actually, interestingly enough, I work for Nationwide, I'm vice president of Nationwide, and part of my territory is to come in and do presentations for Maricopa County, as well as the city of Phoenix and Arizona and a lot of other places across the country. But, you know, I kind of think about going back to our childhood, and I'm 49 years old, so we're a little bit different in age, but I remember looking up, you know, to him when I was young, because, you know, he was always kind of the coolest kid of the group, and he always made me laugh, you know, he always had something nice to say. You kind of always wanted to follow his footsteps, and I think that was the path that he was going down. And then, you know, I think unfortunately you get caught up in these drugs and horrible things happen. And you know, I feel the pain of the family whose loved one, you know, won't no longer with us as a result of his actions. And I feel that over the last, you know, 30 years or so, he has, you know, spent time in prison, you know, very remorseful for what happened, you know, to the victim, and also very apologetic and sorry to the victim's family. And I just think that when you get caught up in the prison system, you know, it's one of those things that you get in, it's hard to get out. And even when you get out, and he said himself that when he came out, you know, you're like a fish out of water because you've known only one thing for all those years. And, you know, you've been confined, and then you're finally out in the free world. And, you know, your family is there to love and support you like we will be if he's able to get out this time. And you make mistakes, and he's made mistakes since he got out. And I think, again, it was the drug. If he can stay away from the drugs, you know, he can be a, you know, a knife, and he can do great things, you know, in society, because he was someone that was on the right path, got on the wrong path, spent a number of years, you know, rightfully so, by the way, rightfully so, spending time, you know, in the system because of his action. But now that he's out, you know, what I can see him doing is coming out and actually working with people, maybe young, troubled teens, working with them to kind of put them on the right path and telling his story about what he has gone through over all these years and making sure that, you know, some of those folks don't end up on a similar path. So, you know, I guess to wrap it up, just know that he has a family that loves and supports him. He is not someone that has hate in his heart. He has love in his heart. He's made some very, very serious mistakes. He's paid for those mistakes, and I just think that if we can get him out of the prison system, you know, let's say the third time is a charm, because I know that he's had to get it revoked a couple times in the past, but let's get him out, you know, let's get the love of the family around him. My uncle just passed away last week, which was, you know, a very sad event. You think about all those things that he's missed and all the times that he's missed spending with family because as a result of that. So, you know, we are just here to love and support him, and if he is able to get out, we're going to do everything that we possibly can as his support system and family to make sure he doesn't go back.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your time. I'm going to go ahead and ask other family members if they'd like to share anything with the board.
Yes, Yes.
Thank you, sir.
I would like to approach the board and let him know.
Sir, if you could, well...
You could bring the chair up here, sir. Just, okay.
Thank you, sir. If you could state your name first, pardon.
My name is Sirius Gillespie Jr. I recently married Mustafa's sister 13 years ago. I'm a newcomer to the family. I've spent time with Mustafa the last time he was released. We accomplished so much in 2 days. I knew that given a chance, he would be able to do anything that he wanted to. We did nothing illegal, and I've never committed a crime in my life. I feel like if Mustafa and I could spend more time together, he would not be in the situation that he is in now. The family members that I met are all senior members now. We lost a member of the family just this past week. It's unfortunate.
Uncle Jim.
Yes, Uncle Jim. It's unfortunate that some of the younger people in our family don't even know who Mustafa is. And it's going to get to the place one day when all the seniors are going to be gone, and the young people are not going to be here to support him. I feel like if you was to release Mustafa, we've had other members in the family who have used drugs before, and they're clean now. They're not the type of people that you would have to worry about in the future. I don't know as much about the family as some of the other members of the family do, but I feel like with the support that we have now, we could help Mustafa become the person that he really wants to be or should be. I appreciate you listening to what I have to say.
Thank you, sir. May I ask a quick question?
Yes.
And I'll see if my fellow board members have any questions, too. You were with him when he was released the last time. I appreciate that you understand that he's got ongoing drug issues.
Who has on?
Mr. Kassim.
Well, yes. I don't know about his drug use. All I know is that when he was out, we had to do several things that needed to be done in order for him to be a good citizen. In 2 days, we got his driver's license, his registration, got his car fixed, found that he had a job. I mean, these things are difficult for people who are in the mainstream. He accomplished in a couple of days. And I feel like if he was free, he would be able to do many things that are possible. It's just my opinion.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you for listening.
Yes, ma'am. You can state your name when you get to the microphone.
Hi, I'm Julia Gillespie. I'm Mustafa's sister, and he has a half-sister in Michigan. But through it all, the whole beginning, I'm 22 years old. Like he said, he was on this PCP, and it was new to us out here. I never used it, but I have, had situations in my life as well out here in Arizona, but I overcame them. And I just feel that my brother has been incarcerated 35 plus years, and it's all been because of drugs. Then how do he's been in there, and I know he tried to cope with being in there for all that time, 25 years to life. He was looking at 22 years old. But when he didn't know about my uncle passing, my mom's brother. But anyhow, all those years he's been incarcerated, he's missed out on so much. My mother had black hair when he came. Now she has white hair. And it's just been because of this drug use, and I think he used the drugs to cope with his 25 and all these years he had to be in there. Never was a, always was a, the jokester in our family. He was the funny one. He was the, you know, happy-go-lucky one. But when we came out here and that happened, it was just devastating for the whole family. It was like, that ain't even Kirk, you know. His previous name was Kirk. And he changed it inside the prison. But I love you, Mustafa. I love you. But what I'm trying to say is that how did he get, you know, all this drug use and everything, how is he getting it? How was he even getting this stuff up in the prison? They're supposed to be protecting him, you know, having, you know, it's the Department of Corrections, you know, it should be a facility that is trying to correct people and whatever they're doing wrong and in their life, you know, and how is drugs getting up in there? How is he doing all this stuff? This is just, you know, baffling, you know. I know, you know, they sneak stuff up in there and everything like that, but it's just tremendous all those years, 30 years, you know. Then, you know, he just needed to and has shown the family that he has gotten a complete way from that, trying to get out of there. He has done 5 years, and they none even started his time that they sentenced him to 4.5 or whatever, and he's been in there 5 years, and they you know, he had to, they said they can start that time, anytime they want, you know, but, you know, understandably, but all behind drugs, and he needed help. He needed help in there, and, you know, for his rehabilitation, that's what he needed all these years, you know, help in trying to cope with this problem as a young man, 22, you know. I just wanted to say that I pray that the board planted in their hearts to let my brother go ahead and do his time. They already knew. He had 5 years over weed and drugs. It's hard how his life had to be and what has happened in his life, you know, over drugs, not harming nobody else but himself and his children. His grandchildren are grown. Now he has a great, great grandchild. His grandchild had a child. He got two great grandchildren. Behind drugs and being in the prison, and they come out and probably thinking he's still at that age when he left here, 22, trying to regain all those years when he can't. That's over. You hear what I'm saying? But I'm just sad, and I just wish you guys would grant him the opportunity to do what he needs to do to get out of the prison system. He has much support in his whole entire family. We are all doing well in our lives. I work for the state of Arizona, CPS, and I've been with the state of Arizona for 15 years. And I had problems in the beginning, but I changed my life, you know, and it's just seemed like since we've been here in Arizona, you know, we had a great upbringing. My mother brought us up well, 4 children, 3 boys and me. You know, we had much love for one another, and she didn't teach me. We always had, you know, her love, because her mom died when she was 9, so she, like, covered us just like nobody can harm us, you know. She always been like that with us, and all these years, she's like, you know, putting money on their books, and it's just so devastating, you know, and she just said, I can't leave him like that, you know. I know I'm talking too long, but I just asked the board to grant what he needs to do to be towards him getting out of prison.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for your time.
Yeah.
Any questions? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mr. Cassini, we're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you'd like to make before the board? We only ask that you don't repeat yourself. We gathered quite a bit of information today, but this is your hearing. So is there anything else you would like to share?
Yeah, I would just like to ask, you know, if I could just get one more chance, I will be successful in my endeavors. Whatever I do I can be successful in. Crime is not even part of my forte. I don't even think about doing crime. When I got out the first time, I was thinking about being legit, get a job, when I felt society was unforgiving to me. I said, I can't get a job in my own country. I was watching TV where Mr. Ohio, Sheriff Ohio, had just deported 50 people. It was only 50 people that worked at this car wash. I went to apply at the car wash to get a job because I could detail car. Because 50 people would be back. You know, it was like in every place that I applied for a job at, like, they had papers showing that people that hire ex-convicts, you know what I'm saying, like Amazon and Shamrock and stuff. I applied for jobs. But it's a certain kind of, ex-convict that they hire. If you get murder and robbery in your jacket, people are going to frown. They ain't too quick to hire you. You know, so, I felt that society was unforgiving to me. But it didn't deter me from trying to do what was right. You know, I don't know if I was feeling sorry for myself or what, but it made me fall back into a pattern that I didn't want to be in. But I always felt relief in that pattern. But I had to shake that thought of that kind of release because I don't need it. It wasn't good for me. It wasn't good for my family. It just caused us nothing but pain. And I'm not trying to put that kind of pain on anybody anymore. I'm just not hearing that my uncle died. That's why I didn't know. I knew he was sick, but I didn't know he passed, you know. And he was dear to me. I loved him. But that's the kind of stuff that's been going on since I've been locked up. People were passing. But I hadn't seen him years and years and years, but I always had love.
Mr. Cassini, I'm going to ask you to sum it up. We need to go into discussion here soon.
All right, I'm done.
Thank you. If you have anything else, I didn't mean to cut you off right there. All I'm saying is I'm just asking you to sum it up so that we can go into discussion.
I just appreciate it if I can get one more chance, if I can start this other number. You can keep the life sentence on me. I don't need no absolute discharge. I just would like to start this other number. After I finish the other number, I can come before you all again and decide if you want to let me out or not. But I would just like to start it. Because I've been back 6 years on the violation. And I just would like to start that the 4.5 that the judge gave me. And I don't need an absolute discharge. Because I believe deep down inside that I still need y'all fully my head to make me do right. As far as, you know what I'm saying, as far as being back in society, I really need that guidance, that threat of going back to prison on me. I don't need an absolute discharge. I just need to start the number again. We can do house arrest or however you want to do it again, whatever that other number is done. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Cassini, yes.
Did Mr. Lester want to speak?
No, she said in the beginning she didn't want to speak. I did catch in the beginning that she didn't want to speak. Okay, Mr. Cassim, the board will be going into discussion now. Under the rules of the open law meeting in Arizona, you'll be able to listen to the discussion. You can watch us. If you'll just remain silent on the phone, the board's going to make its individual votes, and we'll come back to you shortly with a decision, okay, sir?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Cassin. The board now is now in discussion. Fellow board members, this is, at least for me, one of those tough decisions, in as much that I recognize that Mr. Cassin has served quite a bit of time in the Department of Corrections. I also have some empathy for, I guess, the greater issue that we're having right now with drug use, both inside and outside the prison system. Certainly, I think treatment's in order. The concern I have is that he's had been on release on two separate occasions up till 2012 and had ongoing drug issues. And right now I'm having some concerns about that. I do like the way Mr. Cassin has presented himself today, and I certainly appreciate the support of his family. So I think that's where I want to begin the discussion. Yes, Ms. Rittenhouse.
Truly a case where drugs has really, the drug use and everything about it has just kind of ruined his life, really. I mean, it's, I would feel better. I kind of share your concern. I would feel better if, you know, there was some sort of, you know, if Mr. Cassin had said, I really want treatment, I'm going to treatment, I'm not hearing a strong conviction in that way. So I kind of share your concern as well. And the disciplinary history again is all around, pretty much around drugs. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I move along the discussion, that was the one thing I didn't mention, was that as recently as 2015 he had a major for promoting prison contraband. We heard his story, and I appreciate that. It's still a concern, though, that nearness to drug use. Any further input? Mr. Neal? Yes, sir.
Well, you know, drug use is a problem, and unfortunately, we have a lot of that in this country, but in the prison, it's easy to get drugs. Out of the prison, it's easy to get drugs. But there are a lot of inmates that go through long periods of incarceration that at least don't get in trouble with drugs. But, you know, we see people doing it really down a little bit. They make up their minds to stay off the drugs, staying off the drugs. I'm bothered by the explanation of the original crime being blacked out on drugs and not being anywhere in any of it. It's, I don't know, it's a pretty serious crime that robs the money and shooting each other, defending themselves. But the idea that he was, you know, totally blacked out from it, I know what happened and everything, but, yeah, well, I'm not uncomfortable with that right now, but we've had previous occasions. I do want to have ways to go in early before he's ready to go back out to hold us.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Doctor? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion, and we'll see how we vote. First of all, Mr. Cassin's original offenses involved serious and violent crime, and I believe there's substantial reason to believe that he will not conform to the conditions of release based on his two revocations and recent infractions for contraband. Therefore, I'm going to move to deny parole to consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I'll read the full statement before we vote. Again, to deny parole, consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. The crime dates back to 1982, so we have no set-off provision. And my reasons are as follows, and that is serious and violent crime, loss of human life, trauma to victim, serious bodily injury, multiple victims, violated probation, history of continued substance abuse, prior criminal history, repeat offender, would have to say recent disciplinary infraction, getting back to 15-16. That is my motion. Mr. Newell, is that a second?
Agree.
Okay, Mr. Kassim, the board has denied parole to consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. Based on the year of offense, you'll be eligible for parole within approximately the next 6 months. We do wish you the best and encourage you to pursue any programming that continues to be available inside the Department of Corrections. Do you understand the conditions of your denial, sir, or the reasons for your denial?
Yes, sir.
Hold on 1 second, sir. Yes, sir, Mr. Johnson.
Well, I just wanted to just take the opportunity just to encourage you. You know, all the incidents you have been involved in, certainly been involved in drugs, sir, there are some programs in the institution that you can get involved in, sir. Please try to take advantage of those programs so that you can do all that you can to get yourself off drugs, sir, so that you can continue on with the rest of your life and become a productive citizen, sir.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Kassim, you wanted to say one more thing?
Yes, they don't have any program. They only have the NAPA drug program that they are, that I can go to. They said, because of my license, I can't get into any reentry. The only program they have is get NAPA. That's all they have.
That's good.
Well, I'm glad that NA and AA are available to you, and any further questions regarding programming in DOC, I'm going to have to ask you to talk to your CO3 about that. This hearing is concluded. We want to thank you for appearing before this board, and I want to thank the support of your family members. Thank you.